Hello and welcome to We're Watching What? I'm your host Dana, or the DHK as I'm known, and we watched four things this week. We started off with the new Steven Spielberg movie, The Fablemans. Then we watched the new Timothée Chalamet film, Bones and All, followed by Disenchanted, which is the sequel to Enchanted, which is out on Disney+. And finally, the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special, also out on Disney+. A major, major spoiler alert for all of those things. And without further ado, here's We're Watching What? We saw The Fablemans. I'm interested in, how was this film positioned to you all, either through trailers or word of mouth?
I only ever saw the trailer a couple of times. I was kind of surprised by that, just because being that it's Steven Spielberg's new film, I thought that there'd be more buzz around it, I think. Yeah, I only saw the trailer a couple times.
Yeah, same. I only saw the trailer. I didn't really hear about it otherwise.
For me, I felt like I saw the trailer, and the conversation around it was, oh, this is, you know, Steven Spielberg's mythology story about himself, or his origin story. It's effectively an autobiography, whatever you want to call it. And I went into it thinking, you know, we'd see this kid like playing with dinosaurs, or like having an alien, you know, thinking of an imaginary alien friend. I guess I was just expecting, and you know, that is probably a little bit on the nose for what it should be, and I'm glad it wasn't exactly that, but I was expecting more of the story of things that influenced the films of his that we all know and love and make Steven Spielberg Steven Spielberg. And instead we get this family drama, but then we also get all of the stuff about movies. And for me, it was just a little self-indulgent and long. And I wish we'd focused on one or the other, but I'm curious as to how you two felt about it without that expectation going in.
Yeah. Were you thinking like they'd be kind of more fictionalized than it was?
Maybe less, actually. I thought it was, because at some point, I mean, we love dinosaurs. We're a group of people who love dinosaurs. And I would imagine like just little nods to things, or more, I guess, Easter eggs for the things that eventually made him, which is, again, a rudimentary way to do it. But I for whatever reason, that is what I envisioned based on the conversations I heard around it. That's not to say that that's what the film presented itself as. But when Steven Spielberg makes a film about a kid who loves movies and making movies, I was like, okay, here we go.
Well, yeah, I mean, I assumed it was autobiographical, I guess, while I was watching it, you know, based on his life or whatever. But I don't know much about his life or how he got into film or anything like that either, so I don't even know how much of that was fictionalized.
Apparently, this is like obviously, you know, when you write your own autobiography, you get to take the liberties where you want to take the liberties, and you know, apparently he made his first film when he was 12, not like a little kid with a train set, right? And there were just a lot. Also, that kid who he cast to play him feels like a glow up of, you know, teenage Steven Spielberg.
Well, I mean, I would definitely glow myself up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, there's just no way.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, I didn't hate it by any means. I think it was, you know, a fairly well done film for the most part. I think it was slow, and I think, to me, it felt like, because it was so autobiographical, he wasn't willing to go and make anyone in the story actually look bad. And so it's like we always got excuses, or like what we got to see like a full picture of these, you know, the adults in his life and all that stuff. But I guess it just felt like everyone was just like, yeah, well, your dad's great, and you know, he loves your mom so much, but you know, he wasn't, you know, I don't know, mad that she was cheating, and like, you know, like weird shit where it was just like, I don't know, it just didn't feel actually authentic. It felt like a fairy tale version, but then this fairy tale version didn't have a villain. So it was kind of like, there was no tension, I guess. There was no point in this film that I thought that he was going to give up on film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I didn't actually believe that. Like I knew that this kid grew up to be Steven Spielberg, I guess. And so there was just like no tension. There was nothing. I was like on my seat waiting to see what happened, or wondering how people are going to change or grow, or it was just very predictable. And yeah, but you know, that being said, I wasn't bored or anything.
I was a little bored.
Yeah, I really, really actually liked it, but I wouldn't go like bat for it as like, oh my God, this was an amazing film. You know what I mean? I felt a bit biased because there were a lot of very specific things that were like, oh my God, this was me as a child. Like this was just, you know, and it's
thinking that you were going to love it because it felt like it reminded me of you a lot, like a lot of stories and stuff. And so I was like, eh, I can see this.
Yeah. I mean, what he was doing, you know, like his, it's so cheesy, but I've told it many times about how I got just on this like singular path of like, I want to make movies someday. It was like when he went to go see The Greatest Show on Earth and like came home and then they, you know, he's doing the train thing and they're like, oh, he wants to like have control over the situation, blah, blah. It was like, that's like literally what happened to me when I saw Jurassic Park, which is a Steven Spielberg film. So it was kind of funny. So I was like, oh, you're showing how you got inspired to watch films. And then one of yours did that for me. And it's like, I remember the day I saw that opening day with my parents and came out and my sister and came out of there. And like my dad had to explain to me how, because I was obsessed with dinosaurs and I was like, these, it was real to me. It was like, I've never seen, you know, because I loved Star Wars, loved all these things, but you know, they're not real. But that looked real to me.
I'm sorry,
you
know, they're what?
Like, well, you know, they're not on our planet. How dare. This was our planet. This was Costa Rica, you know? But it was, you know, so it just, I had to have that explained to me. And so I had that experience and my dad loved video camera stuff and he gave me a camera to use. And my friend and I were like making movies. I was making dinosaur films with my Jurassic Park toys all the time. It's the only way my dad could get me to go camping was if we could make a Jurassic Park film. And then, you know, graduated on to making, remaking horror films with my sister and my cousin on summers and stuff. And it was like, this was like my life. And I was like, I expressed myself through film. And it felt and like, so, like that's, just a kid doing that.
I do feel like, and this is maybe why I, you know, don't hate it or whatever, is because I do feel like Steven Spielberg's earned the right to make whatever film he fucking wants to make, right? Like, if you want to make a idealized version of your childhood or whatever.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break and be right back. And we're back. See, I disagree with that at this point. And not, yes, if you want to make an idealized story about your childhood, whatever. Okay, I'll take this back. Yes, Steven Spielberg can make whatever film he wants to make. Any filmmaker can make whatever film they want to make at this point. My big frustration with it is when people laud it as if it is some sort of innovative, you know, spectacular, life-changing thing, which is what it's being currently positioned as. And I'm like, this is a fine movie, but, and I had the same issue with Ready Player One. And I felt a lot about this, about his work in the last however many years, but it no longer feels like Steven Spielberg is innovating in the way that like Steven Spielberg used to. It's like Steven Spielberg is performing as somebody else would do Steven Spielberg, right? Like when I saw Ready Player One, I was like, this is an ode to him, but it didn't need to be him doing it. This is very similar to me where it's like, yeah, if he had written the script, I could have seen somebody else directing it because none of this feels innovative or new. He's sort of stuck in this style. And one of the things I did love about him is that he did have, you know, a range to the things that he does.
Yeah. And I think that part of the problem, it's like a double-edged sword, is like he is, I don't know, arguably the most iconic director of all time. Right. And I mean, you know, we'll see in 50 years if people look back at everything since film lived. But
he's certainly like a modern, he's up there, you know, right? Titan.
Yeah. And he innovated so many different things and has done such a wide variety of types of films that have informed like pop culture and films after them forever. Right. And so he kept on kind of setting the bar and setting the bar and setting the bar. And at some point it's like, that's got to run out, I would think. But but I understand. I get totally what you're saying. And I think that, you know, like I said, I wouldn't go to bat for this thing. Like, oh, man, this is an amazing film. Give it an Oscar. You know, but it spoke to me on like a personal level, but it's very specific to someone who had that experience. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not necessarily something that is going to like necessarily resonate with everybody. And does every film need to? No, but it's kind of like, well, this is very self-indulgent. It should resonate with wider.
And again, it was, yes. And I'm not saying that I don't agree that it wasn't self-indulgent, because it, you know, obviously making a movie about your own childhood is a little,
It's in like inherently by definition, you know.
There's a lot, right?
Egomaniacal.
It's like, you know, yeah. But so yeah, I hope it doesn't win everything or anything.
Well, my worry is, this is my other.
Has he won Oscars and things?
Has Steven Spielberg won Oscars? He's, I think, right? So.
Oh,
yeah,
because didn't Munich win?
Yeah, Munich's won. I mean, so many of his films have won Best Picture. I think Color Purple was
Saving Private Ryan, Schindler's List.
Right. That whole, that era.
Yeah. So this is my other frustration with this movie, is that so much of this centers, so much of the family story centers around his Jewish identity and being, you know, they are the only Jewish family in this neighborhood or whatever it is. And, you know, we have the whole bullying anti-Semitic storyline. He didn't cast Jewish actors. And you can't tell me that there aren't Jewish actors in Hollywood, you know? And I had the same problem with Armageddon Time, where if the crux of your story, Seth Rogen is Jewish, but if the crux of your story is about these identities, and I'm not talking about like being Israeli, but I'm talking about just, you know, it's, come on. Come on.
Especially also when you look at someone like, since it is autobiographical, it's a thing where it's like also he was going and getting into this industry as a Jewish person.
Right. And was, and
so it's like,
yeah, it's just, you know, like, so you were gatekeeping your own.
Yeah. You don't want to
leave the door open, you know, do the thing.
You know, and it's not like there's
yeah, if he had like written it and then like a protege did the movie or something,
sure.
You know what I mean? It would just feel a little less.
One thing that I thought could have been fun, because I had talked to a friend a little bit about, and like the way it was structured, I really enjoy that there were parts of it, not necessarily when you're watching the shorts he would make, but that there'd be parts of it that would be exposition scenes that ended up being like short films in themselves. Like there was a lot of those. It felt very intentionally structured that way. And like you get a short film with no talking about when he's making the film or when he's finding out his mom's cheating or that kind of stuff, emotionally cheating.
Yeah.
And I loved the way that was done, but I kind of felt like it, what could have maybe brought it, maybe to kind of what you're kind of talking about, Dana, too, is like, if you kind of introduced, not necessarily fantastical, but more of a like fantasy element to like showing us visually kind of when he's escaping into this kind of form of expressionism, that you could have really brought it to a place that was like something we really hadn't seen in that same vein, that would really articulate how, what it feels like when he's making a film. And it's like a fantasy type of thing, even though he's making a war picture or he's making a, you know, Western or whatever.
I've realized when we just having looked up the things he's won Oscars for, okay, fine. We saw the origins of Saving Private Ryan, you know, but to me, I forget that he did that. I'm like Jurassic Park, Indiana Jones, or
Buzz. He did like Flags of Our Fathers.
Yeah. So I guess there's that element of it, but. No, I completely agree with you about the escapism and just the – also, when you call yourself a genius in your own picture, you know, it's – anyway. But, you know, seeing his – sort of that as his form of connecting or interpreting the world in a different way, I would have – I agree with you. I would have liked to see it represented.
Yeah, it'd be that element that we just – I mean, it's not that that's never been done, but it would be that element that would make it something that was more than just a – kind of cut and dry. You could just read this in a couple pages about Stephen Spielberg's childhood.
Yeah. Well, so that was my top thing coming out of this movie, where I was like, cool, I want to Google his mom.
Yeah.
Like, that's about it. You know, I was like, alrighty. Like,
yeah.
How much of this is real? And, you know, that's not the best feeling coming out of something.
Yeah. And I had wondered, and I could hear what you're saying, Jackie, about like the, like, kind of everyone was made to look decent. And I kind of wondered, I was like, was that like, okay, I'm going to kind of revision a little bit and make sure no one's bad here? Or is it also kind of something where, because it's his story, it's like uniquely through his lens and he's kind of telling us kind of how he experienced everybody. But like when you're a kid, you like forgive your parents for so much more than, and things that for so much more, you kind of see things in a different way.
I also think the older you get, you understand how hard life is and you kind of forgive your parents, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For things that you didn't understand as a child. So like, even like, so, you know, I don't know how old Steven Spielberg is, but however old he is, looking back at his childhood, it might, you know what I mean? Like,
you understand more what
different, you understand a lot more what's going on and whatever, but.
Yeah. That, and there's also the element.
Imagine that kid him was so chill about everything.
No.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. You know, and but it's like, also like the, I could see rose colored glasses about his reactions to things too, but then also, if his parents did handle it as appropriately as possible, dad probably didn't really let the kids see those sides of like, when he's wanting to, you know, kill the world because of what's happening and all that. You know, so he's like, he's speaking to his experiences of what he witnessed, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I wondered, we won't really ever know, but I just wondered where that line was. Cause I had similar thoughts where I was like, oh, everyone's so nice in this. Cause I liked everybody. Even
I
wasn't even really mad at Seth Rogen's character. I was like, oh, you caught feelings. It's okay.
You're always brought along. So yeah, of course you love her, you know?
Well, yeah, I wasn't mad. I do think you are very right. Cause he, like I said, he's 75 now. I'm sure he has a much different perspective on it. And I was also like, no, Michelle Williams shouldn't have to suffer, or Mrs. Spielberg / Fableman or whatever it is. You know, like, of course, I don't believe that this character
on everyone's side. And I was like, oh, look at how adult his dad's being by letting her just live her life. And like,
I loved Paul Dano in this film, I will say. I mean, he's great.
He was fine. Yeah.
There was this side of him that, like, I don't know, I guess I don't see quite as often in things, because he's often edgier and more nefarious, I guess, in a lot of stuff that I've seen him in. And so I felt like this was a nice soft side. I was like, aw.
Yeah. And that's the problem, is I liked everyone. So I was really not rooting for anyone specific. You know what I mean?
Except for the one kid. I didn't like the people at school, but like, especially.
Yeah. Yeah.
The obvious villains, right?
Yes.
They're the villains, as always. And that was the other part of it. I was like, in high school, I was in ASB, and they created a position for me called the historian, and it was so I could film everything. And I made a highlight video that I had to show everybody. And I was like, oh my God, my life.
There are some movies within the movie that I enjoyed, and I wish it had narrowed in more, right? Like, I liked just the
I think go one way or the other, right? Like, I think we're saying, like, go completely fantastical with it, and then we're like, here for you, right?
Yeah.
Or go more real to life and be honest and brutal about what really happened and how it really felt.
Yeah. Well, and then I think there's an element too, like you were saying, like Steven Spielberg gets to do whatever he wants. It's kind of like Scorsese, Tarantino, these directors who, like, they don't get
no one criticizes anything they do anymore. Right?
And if this had been, this same story could have been about a director who's made two films, and that director would not have been able to release it with this runtime, because it didn't need the full runtime. It could have used a half hour off, you know?
Yeah.
So, because it's a sweet story, it just could have been very much condensed.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The other line I want to call out is the sister is like, oh, when are you going to write movies with, like, feet women characters again, basically? And then they just gloss over it. And I was like, and I know that it's supposed to be this meta thing because Michelle Williams' role is the one they're putting forward. But I was just like, yeah, but really, when are you going to? And the answer is no, you're not going to, which I'm like, okay, great. There was a lack of self-awareness, I think, for me, that was frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, and I get it, you're Steven Spielberg, you get to do what you want, but that's not always a healthy thing.
I mean, I usually find that it isn't.
Yeah.
Like most artists or, you know, authors specifically that I love, eventually I can't read their books anymore because they stop getting edited for some reason, or they have an editor that's just a yes person because they're bloated and weird and, you know, and it's just like,
yeah.
Once you prove you can sell, it doesn't really, they're like, eh.
It doesn't matter that no one cares anymore. They're just like, do whatever you want.
All right. Well, do we think it's going to win Oscars?
I see certain, like, you know, the Academy loves Michelle Williams. Like, that's, I could see, like, a supporting, like, nom or something. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah, not, is it going to get nominated? It's going to get nominated. Yeah, it's like a, you know, not unfortunately, but I don't love when something just, like, default gets shooting.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I think, I certainly think there are some front-running kind of way more deserving films that do have a lot of traction that could potentially oust it. But, yeah, it'll get something then, probably. You know, like, they'll give it something. You know?
I hope not.
I could see some sort of kind of like technical thing they'll do. Just
But even so, then this is the other thing. I was like, what's the technical achievement here? Like, what is the that he hasn't already done and been recognized for before?
They might go and give like Roger Deakins another
for this
cinematography.
Though? Like, this is not.
I know, but yeah, I it's not that I think it that would be necessary, but I
I just get very frustrated at the awards game, which
totally
tire me of that. Yeah.
I'm going to put it out there. I don't see a Best Picture nom. Let's just put that energy out. Win.
I was like, I see a nom because you get 10, but 10, if this wins, I will be deeply upset because I'm like, this isn't the best film of the year.
No, there are better films.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on to another one that I think wants to be an Oscar contender, but I don't think will be, is Bones and All. How did you two feel about this one?
I want to know how you felt, Dana.
How do you think I felt?
I hear the quiver in your voice.
Well, I mean, I have twofold feelings about it. One, I was just super grossed out by it, which means it was effective at what it was trying to do. But two, get it. It's not that I didn't get it. I didn't particularly enjoy it. I wasn't compelled by the story. I didn't think it was that interesting. I think I was the morbid curiosity of the Call Me By Your Name team made a cannibal film without Armie Hammer in it was the drawing point for me. And then watching it, I was like, okay, here we go. This was a thing, but how about you two?
I was going to say the unfortunate timing of that being that this is what you're doing when that news breaks.
Yeah.
And it's starring Timothy, you know, like the other guy. The other
well,
guy.
My thing is, I'm like, I think they knew. I, you know, I think this was not, it takes a while to make a movie. Yeah. Did you two enjoy it? Question mark.
Yeah. I mean, I loved it. I loved watching it. I'm pretty enamored by him as a director for various reasons. I've loved both of his previous films. Suspiria still being one of my favorite movies.
Oh, yeah, I forgot he did Suspiria.
Favorite out of the three he's done. So I kind of look at him as like the way I was looking at, like, very different, but like Eggers earlier in the year with like The Northman coming out. It was very like, okay, this is his third film. This is going to really like solidify for me if he's like one of my like current faves, or if it's like, okay, he had a miss. And I didn't feel like this was a miss for him. I did think it was the driest and the probably most polarizing in a lot of ways of his films. And I think that both of his other ones were quite polarizing. So that does say a lot.
Yeah, that's true. It's funny because I didn't realize it was the same director as Suspiria when I was watching it, but I was watching it and thinking about Suspiria, which is funny because they're not like, I guess it's just like a tone or like a, I don't know, because the stories aren't that similar. But yeah, I liked it. I didn't love it. I wanted, you know, I love a love story. And it wasn't a very well done love story. So it left me kind of wanting on that front. Like, I wanted it to be like more love story-y.
Yeah.
Because I mean, like the posters.
Between them.
Yeah, I didn't get it. And so that was kind of a bummer for me because like I would have been really into it if I had really bought the romance. But I didn't really buy the romance. So yeah, that's only, you know, if it had a romance in it, it would have been like one of my favorites.
Yeah, I felt like the I could be missing here, but I felt like the lack of chemistry felt kind of intentional in that it felt like such a story about, like, I don't want to use the word marginalized, but like you're ousted from society kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then you it's like they're coming together based on like they have this like thing in common, and that's the best they're going to get. That's the best they're going to find. And so they're like, they are drawn to each other because they can't be drawn to other people.
No, I got a little bit of that, but I also kind of felt like they were trying to sell that they were really falling in love. Like when they were like in the middle of,
I guess I thought they
Montana or like, you know, like they were in the city in the fields and like loving on each other. Like I thought that was trying to be like, oh, they really do. It's not just
I felt like they felt like they were. But,
oh, the characters felt like they
were. But we're looking
were like
at
deluding
kind of
themselves
like,
into it.
Because it's like that's their choice, kind of. That's their option. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't know. To me, if they wanted to do that and just have it be like they are, you know, having to self select each other because of this thing, then the inclusion of the Mark Rylance jealousy storyline, you know, creepy old man in the van stalker thing is a little misleading on that, because I mean, not that she would have been like, okay, this is, you know, but he is the first person who like comes along who she, you know, connects with in this thing, and she's very
but
clear,
she got,
like
a creepy vibe from him.
Right, but I'm saying she very clearly, like, she establishes like, oh, you know, just because you are one of it does not mean I have to, like, you are not my people necessarily.
Yeah, I don't think it's like,
but I mean, he's
desperate, but it's like wanting that. You still want companionship, you know?
Yeah, he was young and not bad looking. And, you know what I mean? Like all those things, like where it's like, oh.
Yeah, and was out there kind of.
Yeah,
like,
I'm not saying he would have like stood in for that, but I do think that it like convolutes it a little bit.
Yeah, I felt like, I guess, seeing his what Mark Rylance was doing.
Yeah.
Was kind of almost doing the opposite for me, where it was kind of showing that like this is giving her a preview of like, this is what's going to happen to you. You're going to be this like old, alone, can't be with anybody, all that kind of stuff. You're going to become this man.
And then he's stalking
her at that point later on, because I felt like she left Timothy and then all of a sudden she goes back to him. But I think it's because when Mark, when he caught up to her, it was like, holy shit, I don't have options here. Like, this is, you know, and not to say, I think she's like, oh, I guess I'll just settle for this boy. I think that they young love, you know, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That you,
the first person who you connect with, that, yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay, it feels like, well, this is the only person for me, probably, you know. And then you meet, which I thought was the highlight of the film, I thought was his face, in the kind of in the middle, like the guy is the one who like wants to be an eater.
Oh, Michael Stuhlbarg and the other guy?
Yeah, I can't remember his name, but he was the other guy, the one who's the actual eater, was the father in Call Me By Your Name, and I thought he had the best scene in that one.
Yeah, yeah, Michael Stuhlbarg is the...
Is that his name? Yeah, Mike, okay.
Yeah.
And I thought he was so...
He's the one in the overalls.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The one who's like the actual eater. And like, yes. I thought their scene kind of showing their companionship and being like, this guy actually like was like lusting after what I was doing and their connections like based on that. I thought it was just kind of an exploration of the different kinds of relationships, I guess, that you, when you're kind of forced into a corner of like only people like us can be together.
Yeah.
Kind of what that all looks like. And I was kind of fascinated by that element of it.
So this is my top question out of it. And it's not... I think because I was not super engrossed in Love Story and all the other stuff that I fixated on, I was like, I'm okay if you establish a world in which these people just exist, you know, that eaters just exist. But the lack of explanation for their ability to tear into flesh, you know, like really bothered me, where I was like, skin does not come off that easy, you know, like, like body parts do not come off that easy. What world are we living in that? I just wanted one little thing. To, you know, because we do go down this line that it's a genetic thing, right? It's a whatever it is, it's passed down. So I was like, I just need one thing to tell me, like their jaws are super strong or whatever it is. That I know it doesn't need to exist in it, but I would have felt better about the resolutions had I like had some itty inkling of that earlier.
Yeah. I feel that. Like you could say like the adrenaline or something takes over and it like
strength. Saying that you can't chop someone's finger off, but it like,
no, but just it like it came off difficult. Like just goo, you know.
You know what I mean? Like it's really hard to bite through bone.
Well, Chloe Sevigny, like her mom chewed off her own hand.
Right.
Like it's like that takes, you know. I would presume if she was doing that, they would have for how long that really would take, they would have you know,
well, I mean
people who can eat bones, right? So
well,
like really,
literally
there's something
look at like 127 hours or something, right? Where it's just like you can do it, but it's not easy, you know, as opposed to this world in which it's just like nom 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 nom.
Yeah, and there's clearly something to it, because again, they, you know, they eat bones and all. So like they can. And so it's a thing where you're jumping on pelvises and bones and stuff.
I wanted that to come back around in a different way, where I thought it was going to be this rite of passage and I thought they were going to go through it together or something along those lines, and then to have it be at the end and she's like, I want you to eat me.
Well, and I think I don't know if I heard it wrong or whatnot, but I felt like part of what he was traumatized by was I felt like he ate his entire father, right? Like he ate dad bones and all.
Oh.
And then she's like, well, what did it feel like? And he was like, it felt amazing. I felt it all like gushing through my veins and all of your artery in my body or whatever was alive and all that, like kind of thing. And I was like, okay, so he did that already.
Oh, so he, okay, maybe I.
But again, we didn't get, there wasn't like some big, you know, event, but it was, but I got that he had done it.
Okay.
Prior.
Yeah. I wanted to be emotional in that scene and like sad that they had to make that choice and you know what I mean? That kind of stuff. And I didn't care.
Yeah.
The ending scene did get me, but I was more feeling bad for her. I just like everything she'd gone through and then the trauma of this old man there really creepily like assaulting her and all that. And then so I got me, but I could totally see that, because if it was a thing where you just like it was like this sweeping love story that you were so invested in their relationship, it would have been tragic, you know.
I would have loved
it.
It
would be really sad.
It was also much like Fablemans. I just thought it was long.
Yeah, you could have trimmed it for sure.
Yeah, and I've seen so many just over bloated movies in the last however many, like month and a half. I'm like, stop.
There have been several, And he's I feel like he's a very long-winded filmmaker, because I felt like, even though I love him, I feel like Call Me By Your Name could have been shorter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't feel the same. I mean, I agree, it could have been shorter, but I did not feel necessarily the same level of just like, okay, when will it end for this?
Yeah, this, I do agree also that this, you know, three quarters of the way through, it did have an element for me of kind of like, where is this going though?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like where, what are we working toward? Whereas Call Me By Your Name, you know, you're working towards some ending to this situation that cannot be, you know.
We know there's going to be a tragedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And then Suspiria, I think, is his longest film. And that one does not drag for me at all, but I'm a weird Mysterio.
I have not seen that one, understandably, probably to this
group. Yeah, I'm sure. But yeah, I don't know. It still captivated me enough to where I was like, okay, like I'm excited. I continue to be excited about him as a director because I like his vision for things. But he could get less long-winded.
Yeah. Sure. Over the break, I watched The Menu. I didn't watch, but my parents watched The Menu and Banshees of Inisherin, and I was like, do I make them watch this as the trifecta of
just do it.
Yeah. Just weird bodily food. Harm, you know, whatever movies. I did not, because I was like, there's a line and it's this. It's definitely Bones and All.
You didn't want to destroy them too much.
It's not even destroy them, because they're the ones who were like, oh, have you seen The Menu? Is it good? And I was like, you're not going to like it, but you can watch it if you want. And they were like, okay. And I was like, told you wouldn't really like it, or not even like it. They just don't get it, you know. And I was
I would never recommend The Menu to my parents. They wouldn't understand most of the jokes. They wouldn't. It would just
none of it. Yeah. No.
Yeah, I would to my mom, but I don't know that she'd love it. But I'd recommend it to her.
Yeah, but this one, I was like, this is a hard no. This is not I'm not even going to try it. But there is a theme happening this season. I just, you know. All right. Well, moving on briefly to Disenchanted. Are we big Enchanted fans? Are we not big Enchanted fans? Where do we? Oh, okay. Matt's not. No, both of you are nodding yes. How did this live up then? Yay? Nay?
I mostly hated it.
Oh wow. Okay. Sadly, like you really rarely say you hate things. So
yeah, and I feel like
yeah, I know. I get it.
I very much did not enjoy myself watching this movie. I almost turned it off like 7 times.
Okay.
But I was like, no, I just got to get through it. But man, I thought they missed the mark hard.
Well, then important question, Jackie, how far did you make it?
I actually did watch the whole thing. But it was like a train wreck situation where I was just sitting there watching it and just being like, because it just had none of the charm of the first one. And I thought the first one was so brilliant and so funny and so, it's just a wonderful film. And this was...
I think what happened for me, and I know this would have been a lot of work that they wouldn't have wanted to do because they like to keep it mostly live action, but in the first film it was such it's a fish out of water story, right? And it's funny, and all of the songs in it are like making fun of the fact that like this woman
right? Mm-hmm. And so then everything is funny.
Yeah. And so for this, when they're making it into like, oh, I want to bring fairy tale here, whatever, I thought the world should have been getting animated or something. Like it should have been like bringing it there. And it's like where these people are suddenly like now not turning into like, oh, I'm just a princess, whatever, but now having to fill these roles where they are people who don't understand fairy tales. Like, you know what I mean? Like if you really wanted to flip it on its head and do something creative, I thought that's something they should have done. And I felt like all of the songs were just so annoying, and I didn't think that any of them mattered. None of them were telling any part of stories. They just were like, we're just going to sing real quick.
They were songs for song's sake, and like the original ones were so funny and so good and moved the plot forward and, you know, just.
Well, I love musicals too, right? I think, Jackie, I know you do, Jenna. I think you like them fine.
Yeah,
right?
I love a good musical.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Well, what I was going to say, yeah, because I love a good musical too. I was like, why are there so, you don't have to have this many songs. The first one was barely a musical. It had a few songs because it just was like funny making fun of Disney musicals.
Well, yeah. So I think this one, the thing it lacks the most is like the self-awareness. Again, this is a big problem this week is the self-awareness about, or maybe it is aware, but it just doesn't know what to do with itself. I didn't hate the concept of her becoming the stepmom. Like I thought that was an interesting way to approach it. But then you've got all these other
And then like you basically waste Maya Rudolph's character who would have been an interesting foil. You know what I mean? Like that could have been more interesting, Amy versus her. You know, I thought we were going to get a lot more of that, you know.
Well, or it's just Amy reckoning with her becoming, not wanting to become the stepmom. You don't need a third villain.
Either one.
Yeah.
But like either use her to the full extent or just don't have one. But it was just such a bizarre like plot.
I was trying to figure out if do Patrick Dempsey and like Amy Adams secretly hate each other or something like that? I felt like they had like 3 filming days together and the rest they were like, okay, we'll write you your own storyline so you don't have to film together or whatever it is. I don't think they actually hate each other, whatever, but you know, it was a very odd lack of cohesion between the two.
Well, it was. They had no chemistry. And in the first one, I believed their chemistry. And in this, it was just like nothing. And I thought also, Morgan, is that her name? The little girl who's now a teenager. I thought like centering the story so much around her, like it just switched leads real quick.
Yeah.
Kind of in a weird, I was like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? So I was really upset. But, but you know, I didn't have like, kind of like the Hocus Pocus 2 happening. It wasn't, even though I'm probably a much bigger fan of Enchanted than I am the first Hocus Pocus. Like, but I didn't have like these hopes of like, oh, this is going to like be amazing.
Right.
But it just also felt like, okay.
But I thought it wouldn't be terrible. Like, I thought it would be okay. You know what I mean? Like, I thought that it would not be horrible.
I don't know if I found it horrible so much as just utterly forgettable, which in some sense is its own sense, its own version of horrible. But I'm so bored by it, and not, you know, I didn't hate it, but I was also like, I don't care about this in any way, shape, or form.
I just feel like it didn't have any of the charm of the first one.
No, it had none of it, but yeah.
You know, and the first one was mostly charming.
Very charming.
Yeah, I find myself kind of wishing it was more forgettable because I'm trying to wipe it from my brain.
Still. Oh, I had to pull out my notebook because I was like, what?
I envy you. I totally envy you. Yeah. You're like, oh yeah, Maya was in this?
I mean, honestly, she might as well not have been.
No. There's no point because you were making Giselle into the villain anyway. She didn't have a point if you were to just keep her this villain who was like a half-assed thing. It just said
they were just like, we have to put something new
messy.
In it. Yeah.
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 I mean, we didn't need Patrick Dempsey to sing. We didn't need Maya Rudolph and her to have a song to that. We just didn't need any of it.
No. No. That, I mean, that's the biggest thing. We didn't need this movie.
We didn't need it. Yeah, it didn't happen at all.
But, all right. Well, not surprising, though. Also, did we need the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special? Question mark.
I mean, I think you know how we feel.
I mean, I think it would depend on who you ask, probably.
Well, I was actually surprised that the two of you, Matt, you watched it first without, you know, prompting.
I watched it because we were going to talk about it.
Oh, did we? My bad. I thought we.
Jackie, I think, said you could watch
it. No, I said I could watch it. I hadn't watched it. But
oh, I forgot that. Okay, well, that's my bad. But
it's not to say that I never would have. I mean, you know, we watched Marvel stuff. I might have checked it out at some point.
Yes.
You know,
okay. This reframes it because I was like, oh, I'm so surprised that Matt watched it. But that's my bad. I just so much time. It's been a hell of a week. And I forgot that I said we should watch it.
Yeah.
So neither of you liked it, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I really, really disliked it.
I really hated it. I was like, what was happening? Who allowed them to make this movie? Like, someone gave them money to make this.
I didn't hate it, but I sure didn't like it.
Yeah. Well, I will say, I think that's probably the most valuable of our three opinions here because you like those movies a lot more than I do.
For yeah. Sure, well, I like the first movie.
The first
lot.
One, but I guess the Guardians universe.
Like, well, yeah, and not only that, like I am a Drax fan. And
sure,
so,
yeah, exactly.
And right. And so the fact that this centered around Drax, and like I like Mantis. They're, okay, I will acknowledge that I did laugh at some of their stuff. But we've all talked about I'm not a Christmas person. And the fact that this is literally not, it's not a holiday special, it's a Christmas special.
Yeah.
You know, also. I feel like, and I know I've talked about, I'm not a huge, I don't like him, but Chris Pratt looked terrible in this, right?
Yeah, I agreed.
Like,
my one happiness was that he was not in it a lot.
Yeah.
Because I'm so
you want to talk about one filming day on set.
Like, yeah, right. And I'm just so sick of him right now that I'm like, I was glad he's not in it a lot. But then my sadness was, you know, we've talked a lot about my feelings about Guardians of the Galaxy, the films, but I mean, Drax being just the biggest miss on like, translating a character for me in that franchise, and then Mantis comes along and is just like right there with him, and I was like, oh my god, the two most egregious problems as far as the character translations in my mind are now leading this thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, and so it was really, really coming for me. I know the obvious would have been to have Rocket and Groot be leading it.
Oh, right?
But I would have enjoyed
that obviously,
way
right.
more.
Yeah, Groot's a Christmas
tree. I would have been hilarious, actually.
Well, Groot, yes. And,
like, but so,
be the expected thing, I felt.
Yeah. Well, yeah. My thought, I was like, oh,
it's too expensive, though.
That's exactly it. Yes. I was like, oh, we used all of our budget on the three or five VFX shots, so we couldn't have Chris Pratt's hair and makeup, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but then also, I was like, why did you include Laika so much then? And why did you make it all CG?
Yeah, it was interesting choices all around. And I know I enjoyed Werewolf by Night, I think, more than you both did. But I will say that being a special presentation, as they've labeled it, this as well, and it's very similar length and everything, I just felt like it, the differences were so stark in the
quality. Oh yeah, I mean, give me Werewolf by Night over this any day.
Werewolf by Night, the quality was so intentional and like and done in such a way that, and then this was like, what is happening? And like the very from the very first, I started it, and then that guy was singing, explaining Christmas or whatever.
And Kevin Bacon,
like, the Kevin Bacon thing, I did and didn't hate that because
the callback's cute, right?
Yeah, but and I was also like, okay, Kevin Bacon looks a million times better than Chris Pratt. But then when it starts to get like meta and jokey about how actors are terrible, I was like, oh my god, yeah, just like you're trying to do too many. We're trying to do too much.
And then he's up there and he performs.
Yeah, that like, that's when I was like, I'm sorry.
It has to stop. Please make it stop.
It was the first thing in a while from Marvel. Let me make sure I'm accurate when I'm saying this, but first thing in a while that I can think of where I really felt like, oh, this was like, oh, hey, we greenlit this thing. Can you just come up with an idea for it? Like rather than like,
no, you know, see, I think to me, this read as James Gunn said, I want to do a Christmas special. And they said, sure, James Gunn, this is your budget. Do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah. No, that's probably exactly right.
Yeah.
But it felt to me like a very like, okay, I got to figure out how to fill 45 minutes of a Christmas special.
No, I think to me this was so, much, a very much like.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I just mean it felt that way. Like it came across in such a way that I was like, this was such a joke. Like you just didn't know what to do, you know? Yeah. But
it's the future of the DC universe, folks.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, and also the other thing for me is trying to shoehorn in this whole like, oh, by the way, Mantis is your sister thing as the stakes. I'm like, we didn't need that.
Just reminding me of how offended I was with what they did to Ego in that last movie and then making him his father like that. And just I was so just upset. And then you have to remind me of it. And now Mantis is it was too much. I was like, this.
I found many things deeply upsetting about this, but I'm recalling the thing I found the most upsetting was Sean Gunn having the mohawk thing. And when it's on Michael Rooker and he's blue, it's not as upsetting to me. But for whatever reason, like having it flesh toned and sticky and making his head giant, I was like, oh my god, what has happened here? Like
when it was such a thing where I'm like, it's not gonna happen, like like, you know what I mean, like you're not the new Yondu.
No. Well, no, I don't think he's supposed to be, but it's...
No,
it's,
well, I mean, I guess, but just, I don't know.
Well, obviously, because they couldn't even... They still had to... They're like, no, we got to have Michael Rooker in this for even in animated form.
Yeah.
Which apparently they did. They rotoscoped that, so they actually shot footage of that. And I was like, okay, that's a choice.
Well, and then Cosmo.
Cosmo, that's who I'm thinking of. Sorry, not Laika. The dog. I kept thinking... Laika, because like that's the first dog in space. Yes, Cosmo. Yes.
It's funny you said that, and I understood what you meant.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it, yeah, did not look amazing.
No, that's why I was like, did we spend all our money on this still?
And yeah, you still spent all the money on that, but just did not look amazing, but looked like, as a still frame, looked like okay enough, but then, but so it almost gets more offensive because then when it's moving, it was like, oh.
and I'm like, look, I know that dogs are hard to, like, animals are tough to, but dogs are relatively easy, it seems like. You're not asking this dog to do too much.
Well, and the thing is Cosmo is one of the comedic beats, I guess, in the comics. Like, right, like, where there'll be, everything's very serious and everything, blah, blah, and then Cosmo will say something in dog, you know, and it's kind of like, it's kind of where you do laugh in a Guardians comic. And aside from Rocket maybe losing his shit sometimes.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, no. Like, I just felt like the humor that they were attempting with Cosmo was just so missed every time for me. Like, I just didn't even think any of it was funny.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's because you're making all of this just like a one big joke. So you don't need that. You don't need this talking dog. It's just hammering it over the head for us a little bit too much. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah,
no, I'm with you both. This is not for me.
Yeah. That bums me out a little for you because I think you would have cared more than we did.
I mean, but, I was not like super stoked for it because, again, I am not,
you know, it's a Christmas
special. I'm not an earnest Christmas person. Yeah. And so the fact that it was very obviously going to be a Christmas special, I was like, oh, no, thank you. But yeah.
And then they use Smashing Pumpkins for you, Jackie, at the end. Their Christmas song.
All right. Well, we already watched a lot, but we're watching what? What else did we watch over our extended?
I caught up on season 2 of Sex Lies of College Girls, which...
Hey, me too! I finally watched.
Still love. Oh, you did it?
Yeah, I watched...
I love that show.
The first season, and then I was watching it today on my lunch, and I realized, I thought that there was like a whole second season. I didn't realize I was.
No, it's rolling out. You're caught up. Yeah.
No, there's like four.
Yeah. There's
Two a week. They drop two at a time.
Oh, they work. Drop two a week. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Like Thursdays, it's two every Thursday.
Now I'm bummed because I'm caught up. So that was a bummer. But exciting.
Are you caught up too, Dana?
Oh, yeah. I love that
show. I was laughing. I mean, I love the show. I've loved it since the first episode. I just think it's hilarious. But I was laughing at like these college boys and doing this like strip thing. And it was like, this is not what
this you know is a fantasy show. Like, they do not look like that. Like,
no. What I loved so hard about it is that like in every other college movie, the women are always like so perfect and so beautiful, and like the guys are fine, but they're not like these guys were, right? Like, no. This was so female gazy, it was just like amazing. Like, I was just like high fiving Mindy Kaling because it was just so obviously like female gaze,
yeah. And you get a nice variety of women in the show and everything, but it was just funny because I was like, the thought that these guys were all up here in the routine and everything, I was like, they're all just these dancers. They're in Magic Mike. Like, it's so, like, yeah. This is Thunder Down Under. It was like,
this is absolutely a spoiler for that episode. But I was expecting at that end of that episode, when they all go up on stage, I was like, oh no, they're going to carry them or something like that. You know, where, you know, they're not going to forgive them for putting this on. So I was glad that wasn't, but as soon as they got pulled up on stage, I was like, oh no. Oh, no.
Yeah. Cause it was a little like, oh, you're forgiving already. Like,
yeah. You know, but, I guess short memories, you know.
But yeah, no, I continue to adore the show.
I love that show so exciting. Much. Yeah.
Yeah, I finally watched it. So that was exciting. I also caught up on White Lotus. So
you had a good TV week.
Exciting. I watched all of Wednesday, which we're not gonna talk about, I don't think. And then I went to Alamo Drafthouse and I saw a movie party for Christmas Vacation, which is my favorite Christmas movie. Oh. That was fun.
I also watched some of Wednesday. I forgot.
See, I have not watched that one yet. Will I like it? Well, you too much. You would know.
Well, Jackie, you've seen the whole thing. Do you think she'd like it?
Yeah. I mean, I liked it. I think.
I'm not an Addams Family person, so that's why I've just been like. And it's not that I'm opposed to it. I just haven't. I've been watching so much stuff that I'm like, this is not on a high priority list.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I have notes, obviously, about a lot of stuff. But, like, overall, I enjoyed it and the arc and all that stuff. So.
Okay.
I was going to say, if you're not an Addams Family, I'm not like a massive Addams Family person, but that may bode well for you because actually I don't think I'm going to finish it because I'm annoyed about being Addams Family enough.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm
like, they made like a lot of interesting choices.
Hmm. Okay.
If you're like a really big fan of the original, which I like.
Not in a bad way. I just am not particularly. So I'll give it a look.
Give it a gander.
Give it a gander. I watched a bunch of things that we'll talk about later, but I also watched Tar finally.
Oh yeah, did you like it? Also long.
Also very, very, very long.
Very long.
I did not like a good chunk of it. I respect Kate's performance in it, but I was very bored for a lot of it. But then there were parts where I was like, okay, this is very good, you know. But I just, by the time we got to them, I'd already been somewhat lost.
Yeah, it's a bit uneven, I felt.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it.
And unfortunately, the parts of it I did not like are the beginning parts. So the fact that I stuck with it is
hard
just,
to get in.
Yeah. I was like, okay, this is my obstinance at viewing.
Yeah. But Kate, as always.
Kate was great. But I will be very upset if she beats Michelle.
Because
I'm like, this is fine.
I like a nomination for them both, but I would love them.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I don't even think it's any question that they're both going to get nominated. But
yeah,
yeah. And then I also again White Lotus, and then Welcome to Chippendales.
Oh yeah, I was going to start that,
which is on Hulu.
Oh, I meant to watch that, but I haven't started it.
I love it. I thought it was great. I watched the documentary, however long ago.
Yeah,
probably
did
very
too.
Recently. Yeah. But I think the series is very good. I enjoy it. I love Murray Bartlett.
Is that Hulu? I don't remember.
It's Hulu, yeah.
Hulu, yeah. Okay, I was going to watch that. I saw, what's his face? I can't remember his name. On The View. Talking about it.
Oh, Kumail?
Yeah, Kumail. Yeah. I was like, oh, yay.
No, fun story. I also then saw him on the street. He was one of my first, like, Out in the Wild celebrity sightings.
Love it.
But, yeah, I think it's just, it's a very well-done show. And I think it's a limited series, which is probably good because it's not going to get, like, out of hand. And we know how it ends.
Right. Well, no, that's good to hear, but it's interesting because it's like, I feel like a lot of what we've talked about especially this last year, but we have a lot of different kinds of true crime and different things that are, some are fictionalized, some are docs, some are both. And often it's just like, just do the doc. And so
yeah,
if it can be done in a way that's like still captivating and good, it's like, I love that.
Yeah, yeah. Especially having seen the doc and now seeing like the fictionalization. I think ironically going back to something like Sex Lives of College Girls, where it's just like the you know, the over the topness of the performances that they put on versus seeing actual Chippendales is probably like where some of the fun. And Juliette Lewis, is that who's in this?
I love her.
Juliette Lewis is spectacular in it.
Okay, I love
her. As is Camille and Murray, but like I just, it's always a delight to see her.
Yeah.
You know, she's at her best.
She's a treasure. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah.
Cool.
Well, that is it for us for this week. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, as per usual, to Jackie and Matt. That is actually it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked it, we would love it if you could leave us a rating or a review or even consider subscribing.